On November 23, 1953, two Air Force officers were sent to investigate an object that showed up on Air Defense Command's radar. The object was shown flying over Sioux Locks. The pilot, Felix Eugene Moncla Jr., and his radar operator, Robert L. Wilson, were deployed to investigate. But what happened after that is still a mystery to this day.
All right, let's talk about aliens.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Close Encounters of the High Kind. I'm your host, Huntley. I like to get high, and I like to talk about aliens and UFOs and shit. And each episode, I'm thinking of doing this and bringing a new guest to talk with me about it. And I'm just going to tell stories while really high about UFOs. And tonight is my very good friend, David, who is a political writer with American Shakedown. Tell us about yourself, David.
Hello. I am very much into politics and very drunk right now, albeit not high, but you know, I figured I've got to join you in some respect for this. And aliens are fucking dope. I don't know, I've always been into space and shit, and I want to meet aliens because I think the world would be a much better place if they were just around, even if we're just hanging out.
Yeah. Well, let's get started.
All right. Yeah. We're good to go.
This is the best intro. Best kind of intro.
So, basically, tonight I want to tell you about the story of Felix Eugene Moncla Jr., an Air Force pilot who in 1953 disappeared. Have you ever heard of Felix Moncla?
No, I have not. But 1953 is a long time ago to disappear.
Yeah, very long time ago. Basically, the story is that there was an object in the sky, and him being part of the Air Force, and he was at a U.S. Air Force base, he was dispatched to investigate it, and that was the last anybody heard from him.
Hmm. Did they find his aircraft or anything?
No. It's a weird story, but that's kind of just where I wanted to start off. I'm going to give you a little background about him. So, First Lieutenant Felix Eugene Moncla Jr., I've seen on a couple of sites that, you know, have talked to family members of his that he liked to go by Gene, so I'm going to refer to him as Gene through most of the episode. But Gene was born in Mansour, Louisiana, a small town that is less than 3 miles, that is close to the Mississippi border and almost 3 hours away from New Orleans. According to a census report in 2010, the population is less than 1,500 and the median income is less than 20,000. And 40% of the population is below poverty.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good reason to join the Air Force.
Like, even if they're still in poverty like that in 2010, can you imagine being there in like the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s?
I couldn't. It'd be way worse. I mean, at this point, I mean, they wouldn't even have the money to update their insulation in their house or anything.
Yeah, no, it'd be awful. Just like, but, ugh. Yeah. But Moncla was the son of a seamstress and a high school teacher who served in World War I, who he was named after. When his father became ill, the family moved in with his uncle, and Gene graduated high school, where he got a full athletic scholarship to Southwest Louisiana Institute, which is now the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. When he graduated, he enlisted in the Army and was shipped to Japan, where he came back and attended the University of New Orleans for a time before he re-enlisted with the Air Force for the Korean War. Where he became an officer pilot trainee, he married Bobby Jean Coleman, to right around that time that he became a trainee to fly planes. And he had a son, and 4 months before he disappeared, he had a daughter.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
To just, you know, have a family, just have their father take it away. Just yeah. out of the blue. No yeah. explanation.
Yeah, and it gets weird. He wasn't alone that night either. But the reason why I have more focus on him is, I'll just read you. He had a radio operator with him that night named Robert L. Wilson. He was a second lieutenant. And he was born in Oklahoma in a smaller town, about 25,000, not small as where Gene was from, but still small. And outside of that, there's not a lot of info on Robert L. Wilson, who was his radar operator that night, who was literally behind him. It was curious, like when I was reading about this, they had so much background on other people, but they had none on his radar operator, who was in the same plane with him.
That's a little weird.
Mm-hmm. But this is where, like, the incident happens. On November 23rd, radar control reported a blip on the radar over Sioux Locks. And Sioux Locks, which is basically canals, it was back then where ships got in and out from the U.S. and the Canadian border. So it's very much very important, and the locks themselves are maintained by the Army. So something above that, an unknown object, could have been anything, especially in those days if you're like in like starting the Cold War and that stuff. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's well, hell, I guess the Russians have always done flybys. they're still doing it now, like mm-hmm. of course.
But, yeah.
Yeah, hell, you know, quick segue. I fucking, well, I guess this couldn't have happened back then, but I saw the International Space Station as like a shooting star, just kind of fly overhead in the fucking mm-hmm. desert in Nevada one night.
Nice.
Yeah, it freaked me out. I didn't know what the fuck it was, but anyways, yeah, you can see all sorts of shit. Especially back then.
Especially back then. Yeah, like that's the one nice thing about going into non-urban areas is that you can see the stars again.
It's really nice. Like, it's surprisingly, you know, you don't know what you're missing out on if you've just kind of stayed in the city limits mm-hmm. or even the suburbs. You can't really see the stars there too much.
Yeah, no.
Not to the same extent as you go out into the desert somewhere, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, hell, UFO could be above us right now, but we wouldn't know the fucking difference because of so much light pollution.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We hiding in all the clouds 24/7.
Hiding in the clouds, hiding in the smog.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the real purpose of the smog right there.
That's how they stay incognito. It's just like, well, they can't see us anymore. We can just investigate them through the smog because I'm sure they have technology to look through that or whatever. But anyways, yeah, Gene was temporarily stationed at the Kinross Air Force Base. And when this blip happened, they sent him and his radar operator, Robert L. Wilson, to go investigate it. So basically, they start flying out there. And the official story was that his radar operator, Wilson, was having a hard time tracking the object from the plane. So Gene had to rely on radar operators at a remote station to guide him to the object. And so the story goes is the radar operators watched as they approached an unknown bogey. And they kept on just drawing closer and closer together. And then suddenly, the two blips of the object and Monclet flying towards it merged into one blip.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they just merged. So the radar operators first thought Monclet had either flown under the object and the object then just disappeared. It just disappeared off the radar a couple, like a minute or 2 minutes later after the merge. So they're just like, okay, well, something weird's going on. And they try to communicate with Gene, but they got no response. So they quickly sent out other planes to search for Moncla. And they searched all night. And from what I read, the visibility was fine. There was like no storm, no clouds, no anything like that. But they couldn't find anything.
Wait, was this at night or during the day?
Probably this was at night, right? It was at night.
It was at night.
But yeah, the visibility was still plenty. It wasn't like it was a foggy night or a cloudy night. They said that there was no issues. And the next day, they went out and tried to search for the plane. And they sent out boats, all the stuff that they would do those days, and divers, and they couldn't find anything. Nothing. Nothing.
That's fucking weird, man.
Yeah, it's very fucking weird. But it gets weirder. So,
oh shit.
The official story is that the Air Force originally reported it as it happened, that the objects merged, that like they watched on radar as the objects flew to each other and just became one. So they were honest when they first like reported this to the Associated Press. But they later backtracked to say the object and Felix plane did not merge. And even better was they said that they believed the object was a Royal Canadian Air Force plane.
What?
Yeah, yeah. And immediately, Canada was just like, no, it wasn't ours because we don't have any flights recorded on our log that night.
Yeah. Dude, that's... See, you know there's something fishy when people start fucking backtracking on their stories because they realize they done fucked up and they're like, oh, we're not supposed to reveal this information. Even if they did, like, merge into one, that would be some fancy-ass flying to, like, you know, merge as one blip on a radar for, like, a full minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, perfectly do... Yeah, that's, like, especially back then, that'd probably be impossible to do.
Yeah,
that's fucking weird.
It's very fucking weird. But there's more that's just like doesn't make any sense.
It goes deeper.
So after they backtracked, they reported two different stories to the wife. Now we don't have like what they told her the first time. I think that it was the same thing, that they were just completely honest. And they were just like, hey, they merged with this. And then they later backtracked and said, oh, it was the Canadian Air Force. And that just, they lied to his wife. They lied to the press. But an official investigation later claimed that sometimes Gene experienced vertigo. And that vertigo, while he was flying, he had an episode of vertigo, and that's what caused him to crash.
Of course. You gotta blame the victim.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem with that, is that Gene had about 867 flight hours recorded. You'd think somewhere in those 800 hours that the case of vertigo would have came up.
Yeah.
Like, why are you letting a dude with vertigo fly like expensive ass warplanes?
Right. They would have at least made a note of it.
Yeah. Yeah. At least a note of it somewhere. But I don't believe that they have. And yeah. And like, also another thing is, why would you send him on like a critical mission if you're like worried about somebody flying over a supply route? Why are you going to send them dude with vertigo?
Right.
Your
elite team for that kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to go to the trainee. The trainee that has vertigo, like maybe like super experienced, like a pilot with like 10,000 hours of flight, they might experience a little bit of vertigo here and there. Yeah, maybe send him, but not like somebody that has less than 1,000 hours and experiences vertigo. And
yeah, like this isn't Training Day, the movie. You don't send a rookie in for a big fucking 40 chess like crime syndicate drug dealer shit bust.
Yeah, why would you send a low level paladin to try to destroy a dragon in some game? Like, why? Especially if that paladin's dyslexic and can't read spells. I don't know. What the hell?
I know, right? If he doesn't even have divine intervention, like, he's just worthless.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. But it's just like that. That's just the biggest thing that just doesn't make sense to me is why send a lightweight out there? And like, yeah, they didn't know it was a UFO, but just suddenly adding, oh well, he had vertigo, by the way, so yeah, that's why we sent him out there. And I'm like, no.
it's fucking, you know, maybe it's one of those secrets that's locked away in fucking Area 51 somewhere. I bet you Area 51's like a just a big stockpile of documents and like the truth about all this shit.
No.
Well, I guess that's stating the obvious, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find like the real truth behind this case in there somewhere.
Yeah, and here's another weird thing about it is, you know how the military has memorials for servicemen that, you know, die?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, if they were on a base, close to a base, and they flew a mission for them?
Yep. They did not have one?
They did not have one.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they didn't have one. And this is despite an official, like, he's dead. Them, the Air Force confirming he is dead, but they had no memorial for him at all. And
yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you know, they could have, if they're going to like lie about what happened already, they may as well lie about, you know, what happened during the funeral. At least give them the honors, the military honors that they give everyone else. But. Can't even do that.
So, you know, it kind of dies down after that. In 1968, on the Canadian side of the Sulak and Sulaks, some prospectors found some wreckage. Ooh. Now, this is the problem: is they don't know if the wreckage was. His plane or another plane of a similar model that coincidentally or not came into the ground in Wisconsin during a training exercise on the same evening as the Ken Cross incident happened. So like apparently there was an accident as well. It was just a trainee accident, but they wrecked into the lake at the same time around that. So they don't know if the wreckage was theirs or not.
Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any like way to mark planes back then, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There was no way that you had just like a number on it somewhere, or like a distinguishing feature that you could, you know, pick out.
Right. Oh. Huh. Shit. What did they find in the wreckage? Did they report on it at all?
Barely. It was basically just like, oh, we found this. And yeah. The Air Force officer confirmed that the parts were from a jet aircraft and speculated they might be from the F-89 missing from King Cross Air Force Base. But the identity of the parts were never published. And the Canadian government states that they have no record of the find. So prospectors find something. You would think this would be big news. Even in that area, or like a plane disappears on American soil and nobody bats an eye about it. Like a fighter plane. No, I'm not talking just like a casual plane, a fighter plane deployed from an Air Force base, chased an unidentified object, merged with it, and then disappears. And then 15 years later, they find parts, but they don't report it and they won't tell you what parts. So there's no way that they can confirm that it was their plane or not, or the training exercise plane.
You would think that, like, some kind of, at the very least, like, local journalist or something from some small towns nearby would be, like, you know, documenting it, or be like, hey, there's something weird going on. Why are they digging up plane parts in the lake or some shit? But I guess they got silenced if that happened.
Yeah. And so nothing really came of it again. It just kind of died down. But in 2006, an email from a person named Preston Miller was sent to a UFO researcher. And it had a quote from an Associated Press story claiming that a group of Michigan divers had discovered Monocle's F-89, the plane that he was doing, that vanished in 1953. The location of the claimed discovery was at the bottom of the Lake Superior in the Sioux Locks, at the approximate location where the plane had disappeared from the radar. The email also contained a link to a website that had recently been created for a group of divers that they call themselves the Great Lakes Dive Company. So the UFO researcher forwards it to other UFO researchers, and it just kind of takes off. So the proof that the company showed was two images from sonar radar, from like a little scan, and it depicted an almost completely intact aircraft resting on the lake bed. It said one of the wings was a little exposed, the tip tank and everything, and looked relatively fine, and it had F-89 Scorpion clearly displayed. The discovery initially caused, you know, excitement for it, because this has been weird since 1953, and the story's so, like, the vertigo and all that. Like, you know, UFO researchers, they, like, even me just being a novice that likes to get high and talk about aliens and read about aliens, even I would be like, the vertigo, everything like that, that's fishy. And the fact that it just disappeared in one blip.
Yeah, that's super fishy. So they found the whole plane basically intact.
They found the whole plane, but then it's been open for like what happened afterwards, but the website just disappeared one day.
Of course.
Yeah.
Shit. Did anyone take any records of it? Well, I guess this was probably like early days of the internet, right?
Yeah.
When was this?
Yeah. This was in 2006. When this happened.
Yeah. So that's still pretty early on.
Yeah. And basically, journalists and UFO researchers delved deeper into the case, and their suspicions were raised as the story became more and more elaborate. Basically, they had been talking to a spokesman named Adam Jimenez in all effort, and he just kind of quit messaging them one day. And then the website goes down, and a lot of people just think it's a hoax. like somebody was pulling their chain, or it could be something more nefarious that, you know, somebody did find it and they were silenced really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they ever hear back from the guy or?
No, just complete radio silence.
Man.
Yeah, just complete, like 1 minute, there's a website with sonar pictures of this plane. They're talking to a company spokesman over email and cell phone, and then website goes down, and Adam Jimenez disappears.
Yeah, that's fucked, man.
Yeah.
Fucking CIA got him, I bet.
Yeah, they did. Like, but this is my big question is like, what, like when they merged, what do you think happened?
Oh man. Fuck.
Did they abduct them?
I'm thinking so. Cause like there was no mention of like human remains in the cockpit or anything, right? And there was no signs of parachutes or like the seat ejection or anything like that.
No. Like,
yeah, I mean,
like
fucking, they just like beamed him up, Scotty.
Yeah, beamed him up. Out of the cockpit. Like, there's three scenarios. We go with they crashed the plane. They experienced vertigo. Gene experienced vertigo and crashed the plane, and the truth is just like this has been blown out. It could have been some kind of other spy plane or some kind of spy craft of some kind, or it could have even been a weather balloon that maybe they picked up and they're like, oh shit, vertigo man, go. But
I've got to Google something. You might hear me typing. No, I'm Googling, do human bodies, dead human bodies float?
Yeah.
Because if they do, okay, hold on. Why do corpses float? Yep. Yeah. Why does a dead body float? So if that guy really died back then, he would have floated up ashore somewhere, and his skeleton would have been found somewhere along the beach. Yeah,
exactly. Over the
past 70 years.
Exactly.
He's just gone.
Yeah. So let's go to scenario two. What, like, I kind of agree with is that they're flying the plane towards them, and then the UFO abducts them from their cockpit. You know, there's Gene and Robert Wilson are no longer in that cockpit. Plane crashes, but because they can't find the bodies. And we're relying solely off of investigation of the Air Force. They could say they didn't hear anything, but they could have heard different things, like some kind of confirmation that there was a UFO. Like Gene or Robert could have been like, hey, there's a flying saucer in the sky. And then been, boom, abducted, boom, plane crashes. And the Army, well, the Air Force is not going to tell us that, hey, there's confirmation of aliens and we don't know where our pilots are.
Yeah, there's no way.
That would cause even more questions. Mm-hmm. So, I think that that's the most likely thing. And that they did find the aircraft and they quickly hauled it away and hid it somewhere.
Yeah.
Because there would be too many, like, say that divers did find an aircraft and they'd be like, okay, well, if these pilots died in the aircraft, they crashed, wouldn't their bodies be in some kind of vicinity of it? Even if it's just like a couple miles getting dragged, wouldn't their bodies be somewhere close to it?
Yeah.
And here's,
I think there would have been, and someone would have found the guy.
Yeah. Somebody would have found him. And there is option three, is the plane was destroyed by the flying object. Like, they see the plane, they're just like, oh, we're about to be attacked. Boom. like torpedo, alien torpedo beam, whatever, fries the plane, fries the pilot, fries the radar operator, and there's some kind of, once again, maybe some kind of communication with the radar operators of them being like, we see this strange flying object and it's shooting some weird weapon that we've never seen before. Once again, the Air Force isn't going to tell us the truth.
No, they're not. Yeah, you know, I guess, well, also, I don't know. It, shit, fuck. I mean, this is like back in the 50s, right?
Yeah.
Because my immediate, 53. Like, knee-jerk reaction to, you know, the last scenario was like, well, maybe some sensors would have picked up some crazy disturbance in the atmosphere or some temperature spike or whatever. But, you know, we didn't have that technology back then.
Yeah.
So there's no telling.
Yeah. And if it's very close to the Canadian border, you think the Canadians would have some sort of insight to it. Maybe it flew across their radar first, coming into America, or maybe it flew there later. There's just way too many variables in the story that make me just go, I don't know. I think there's fishy shit going on.
There's totally a lot of fishy shit going on. There's no telling what the military saw, and, you know. But, of course, they're only going to give us a couple little breadcrumbs and lies and whatever. Maybe the UFO, like, kind of shot straight down from, like, the upper atmosphere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's why it kind of suddenly appeared and then disappeared.
Yeah. Or, this came to my mind, is maybe they did find the pilot. Maybe they did find Felix Eugene Moncla and Robert L. Wilson. Maybe they did find them, but because they witnessed a UFO, they caused this big elaborate, you know, mystery to be solved because everybody's chasing the bodies, trying to figure out what's going on. And they could have been around like 20, 30 more years and just silenced.
Yeah, that's very possible too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do that with fucking foreign informants. Like, hey, if you ever, you know, step outside your boundaries, you know what's going to happen to you.
Yeah. That maybe they did see a UFO. And then immediately, instead of just taking any risk where that could leak out, they just, you know, they either snuffed them out or they locked them away somewhere.
I'm thinking the former.
Yeah.
Because if they were locked away, you know, people would be looking for them. There'd be records.
Yeah.
That maybe not even the military could hide, like prison records for, you know, 20, 30 years.
No. Yeah, there's just a lot of strange things about it.
It's a really weird story.
Yeah, it's a really weird story. And I'm a person that, like, I'm a casual. I'll be the first one to admit that. I'm a casual. As I said, I like to get high and, you know, read about UFO shit and read about or watch UFO documentaries. And I've never heard of this case until recently.
Oh, yeah. How did you find out about it?
I was just digging around and I stumbled on it and I was like, I've never heard of this one. And then I started reading. I was like, that's really weird. Just like the start of it. Like, even if we don't go with the weird, shady things that the U.S. Air Force try to do to, you know, kind of muddy the water, so to speak. But just like, to like a plane just flying towards a blip on a radar and then they just merge into one. And then no plane, no bodies. It's not like this is like, I'm sure Sioux Locks, and which is Superior Lake, is huge. I'm sure it is. But it's not as big as an ocean.
No. No, and you know, it's been 70 years. Even they would have found something from the guy.
Yeah, something by now. Yeah, something by now. Something should have been found by now. But not a body, not a parachute, and not a fucking huge ass plane in the lake.
Right.
So that's what intrigued me. And then it's just like, the more I read, I was just like, dude, like, why is there so many inconsistencies on this? And why was like all of it just like the diving company with the website that disappeared, the supposed part finding in 1968, but no reports of it. The lying to his wife.
Yeah, they're totally covering up something.
Yeah, they're totally covering up something. And it's just like, I want to know what happened. Like, were they abducted? Was there, you know, airplane like zapped out of the sky and just like evaporated into ash? Or has the U.S. government just performed a big cover up and just muddied the waters enough with inconsistent stories that people just gave up?
I thought the last one could be very real.
Yeah, sure. The last one's probably the biggest one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Shit, man.
It's just like, there's just so much. Just like, if you look at the F-89 Scorpion, which was what he was piloting that night, it's like the first big plane, like the big first warplane that had missiles on it, that was capable of firing missiles. Mm-hmm. So it's no small little thing. It's no like World War II plane where, you know, people are sitting in just like an open air, like there's a cockpit with like the person sealed in there, and it's a big plane, and like nobody can find it. There's been no metal fragments found. There's been no oil spill or any kind of liquid. There's been no weapons found, like debris of like a weapon that could have been attached there, gunpowder, something. Like nothing. It's just like, it just never flew out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, shit. You know, maybe the alien, like, transported the fucking plane to the mothership, and mm-hmm. then the military just planted a replica of the F-89 for people to find. Mm-hmm. And then that's what they wrote the story with all the crazy misinformation with.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the real one's just up in space somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think that there were, like, if there was not some elaborate cover up, just a little bit. And I don't think it ever gets solved. I don't think most of the stories I'm going to talk about, there is no resolution, but the fact that this one's buried so deep underneath the Roswells, the Area 51, all the other kind of popular alien stuff. And like, I just heard about this like last week, and I was just like, I'm going to do the first episode on it because it's new to me and exciting.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either. And I mean, I used to watch a lot of alien and UFO documentaries like mm-hmm. back in the day, and yeah, nothing like this.
Nothing.
There's always like interviewing some people from some small towns being like, hey, I got abducted, mm-hmm. but nothing about like a military aircraft getting shot down over a lake. Yeah. And
over a lake, know, on U.S. soil. On U.S. Yeah. soil.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking wild.
Yeah. And like, They say that the chase, they say that the object on the radar was going like exceeding 500 miles per hour. Like, I don't think a jet in 1953 would be capable of going 500 miles an hour.
Oh, shit. F-89 top speed. Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like back in the heyday of like.
Yeah.
Just fucking. When aircraft was really getting invented.
Yeah. Specifically when the jet was being just first invented. Yeah.
In World War II, they were still using fucking propeller.
Using propellers like 10 years earlier. There's no way that an airplane's going like a fucking known Earth aircraft in 1953 is going over 500 miles. Like, also, how did the radar keep up with it?
Mm. Yeah. True. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know how radars worked back then, but yeah.
I don't either, but I don't think they would be able to track 500 miles per hour either.
Probably. Yeah.
So, like, that would be like, if their jets are going, like, even 200 miles an hour, they'd be like, damn, that thing's going fast on this little radar screen in that was built in 1950. Yeah, there's just so many weird things about this.
There's a lot of weird shit. Trying to like quickly Google. Apparently, okay, I don't know. There's a Wikipedia thing. It says the revised specification issued on 23rd November did not specify jet propulsion, but the desired maximum speed of 530 virtually dictated submissions of the would-be jet powered. So that was like 530 miles per hour is like the top end specifications.
That
actually went.
Yeah.
I don't know. According to War Thunder, the video game, it goes up to 628, but you know.
Oh shit. Video games. Oh, that shows you I know nothing about fucking airplanes.
I don't fucking either. I'm just going by like Wikipedia, and I'm like drunk as fuck, so I'm trying to. You know what?
Even outside of that, the story doesn't make any sense.
Oh yeah, the speed is just like everything else. Even on just the surface level of all the details, like it's a weird fucking story. It just nothing lines up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. When did you say the remains were found in what, 1963 or something?
1968 is when they found, like,
1968.
Yeah, 1968. All right. Is when some divers found parts of the plane that were from the missing plane.
Damn! Did they give a month with that? Do you know? Or
October 1968.
Interesting. So, according to Wikipedia, the first flight of the Scorpion was August 1948. It was introduced in September 1950, and it was retired in 1969. So it was retired the next year after they found it in the lake.
Oh shit.
That's fucking weird, man.
Yeah, that's fucking gnarly. Oh, shit. Well.
It just gets deeper. The more you dig into it.
Yeah. The deeper you go.
Fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah. Well, we're going to leave with that one. Because if you have any info, I mean, tell me. I want to know.
For sure. The world needs to know the truth.
The world needs to know the truth because it's out there, man. I don't know where, but somebody knows this shit. And that's that. So thanks. Thank you, David, for joining me on this opening episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You got any plugs?
Oh, hell. Other than AmericanShakedown.com for mm-hmm. political stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to ramble on about political stuff. This fucking alien shit's awesome.
Yeah, alien shit's bad. Alien shit is badass. But if you like what you hear, give me a follow at LOLUFO on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast, follow it, give it a 5-star rating so more people can listen to it and listen to me ramble on, because I like getting high and I like aliens. Have a great night.